Well, good day wherever you may be. Welcome to Observations. We have Kirk here. How are you, Kirk?
I'm fine. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, good. I have a couple of news stories I wanted to cover before we begin. The first was the United Nations, their cultural organization, made a pronouncement today that I thought you might be interested in.
Yes, sir.
The UN Cultural Organization declared an ancient shrine in, what this news story says, the occupied West Bank, occupied by whom? It's occupied actually by Muslims who don't belong there. It's part of Israel, has always been part of Israel. They declared that this ancient shrine was a Palestinian heritage site. Now, just before we get into what the shrine was, is there such a thing as a Palestinian?
No, sir.
Is there such a place called Palestine?
No.
Were there at one time Philistines?
There were. There were Palestine.
Yeah, the Philistine, which has been transliterated Philistines. Do any of them exist?
No, the Assyrians wiped them out by every historical record.
Yeah, the Assyrians did. So there is no, it is impossible today to be a Philistine / Palestinian. Absolutely impossible. To claim it is to be so stupid, your head ought to just, just ought to give up. I mean, why bother with a brain? Because you're incapable of using it if you believe that you are or somebody is a Palestinian.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Philistia, the place called Palestine, did it cover what is now considered to be the West Bank?
Well, of course it, yeah.
No, it didn't.
Oh, you...
Did Philistia, when there was a Philistia, when there were Philistines,
no,
did they ever occupy, did they ever live in, did they ever claim, did they ever control what is considered now the West Bank?
I'm not sure they had anything but the little northern part of the Sinai and maybe one other little patch somewhere towards Syria. But that's
what is considered now, what's considered now the Gaza Strip was the homeland.
Uh-huh.
They had five
right.
towns in the area of the Gaza Strip. They left nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
No historical records. They were illiterate. They had no written language. They had no monuments. There is nothing known about them other than what is said in the writings found in the prophets and in Psalms. Otherwise, there is nothing whatsoever known about them. But there could not be a Philistine, therefore a Palestinian heritage site, nor anyone to award it to in the West Bank. Now,
no.
What's most amazing is, you know what the site is? That the UN, I mean, this is how, I mean, I don't know if they're just stupid at the UN, or they're just plat out evil.
They're just flat out evil.
My guess is evil.
I'm pretty sure it's LeBron, right?
So yeah, the site that they said was a Palestinian heritage site, which means the Jews could have nothing to do with it, could not claim it or anything of that nature. That's a Palestinian World Heritage Site that is in danger.
Mm-hmm.
Is the Jewish Tomb of the Patriarchs. So the Hebrew patriarchs, the tomb of the Hebrew patriarch, Abraham, Yishak, Jacob, and their wives. The place where traditionally it is thought that they are buried. Now, I don't care where they're buried. It doesn't mean diddly squat to me. But the site that is recognized in Hebron as the site that is the burial site of the three most important people, relative to Israel and the covenant, Abraham, Yishak, and Jacob, and you want to call that a Palestinian cultural site? I mean, how could you be so stupid? That is like saying that a tomb in Ireland is a Saudi Arabian heritage site.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how could you be so stupid?
It has no bounds in the United Nations.
It just has no bounds. The Israeli Prime Minister said another delusional UNESCO decision. It is mind-boggling how just rotten, evil, despicable, ignorant. You know, to be politically correct, I guess, today means that you have to be absolutely and wholly incorrect.
Yeah, you got to be bonkers.
Yeah. Did you hear about the latest with the Donald? I guess this is now blown over because now he's playing nice with Putin. But you know how they the Donald, and this was a issue that came up when I was doing Coast to Coast interview this past week. The Donald himself tweeted a video of him at a WrestleMania event that he attended some time ago, where he pummeled some joker, and I have no idea. I don't watch WrestleMania. But in this case, he put the CNN logo on the face of his opponent, and so he's shown pummeling this individual. And you know, it is way, way beneath presidential. It's beneath mature. Mm-hmm. It's beneath adult to show a media logo and then show yourself beating it up. But that's the tweet of the Donald nonetheless, because he's having a tizzy fit with CNN because Brzezinski's daughter mocked Trump for having fake Time magazine covers adorning the walls of his country clubs. I don't know if you know that he did that. I was aware that he had done it. Yeah, he has there's a number of places you can go and get fake Time magazine covers. If you wanted yourself on it, you wanted your wife Terry on it, if you wanted anybody on it, you can. Mm-hmm. You can be man of the year. It can say Captain Kirk, man of the year. And you can put it up in your master bathroom and be impressed with yourself. Well, Donald Trump did that. He had a fake Time magazine cover that talked about his great success with the Apprentice program. And so it was a fake cover of Time magazine. And she was mocking him for it, and rightly so. When I read it, I said, oh, my God, he is a narcissist. The guy's really out of control. So anyway, he decides to get in this battle with CNN. So he himself tweets himself at a WrestleMania event with the CNN logo on his opponent at WrestleMania, and he takes him down and, you know, beats him up. You know, of course, the implication is it's appropriate to beat up the media. The media was not pleased with Donald Trump's outburst. But here's where the story gets interesting. I'm going to read a little bit of the L.A. Times article because it is just their wording is much better than my own. It begins, "For any healthy American who hasn't eradicated his brain by consuming political news on Twitter, here is a journalistic autopsy on how a wrestling video tweeted by President Trump last week spawned a national controversy involving Reddit, CNN, vengeful neo-Nazis, and a hashtag campaign that adds blackmail to the list of offenses which the news media stands accused. It is a saga of politics and the media in 2017 when insane spats, egged on by the president and facilitated by social media, have the power to become consuming viral events propelled by the right's antipathy toward mainstream media. It all started with the Reddit group r/TheDonald. And this article reads, imagine the bustling cantina scene from the original Star Wars movie, except the outlaw oddballs from the far-flung corners of the known universe, in this case, are fraternizing over American politics instead of Darth Vader. It should give one a general idea of Reddit's r/TheDonald channel, one of the most popular and eccentric hives of pro-Trump activity on the internet. The r/TheDonald claims hundreds of thousands of subscribers, with lists of popular news stories from the day and other memes. Top posts receive thousands of approving votes. The online saloon is where, last week, an anonymous Reddit user named after Hans, plus a unprintable anatomical part, it was actually Han Effen Solo, pummeling another performer at a wrestling professional wrestling match, except someone had doctored the GIF to replace the other wrestler's head with the CNN logo, a nod to the president's long-running feud with the cable news network. So here is on Reddit, this site that is devoted to aggrandizing Donald Trump. Hans Effen Solo posts a video with Donald Trump pummeling an individual whose face has been replaced by the CNN logo. On its own, it wasn't noteworthy, except for what happened next. On Sunday, President Trump himself tweeted out what appears to be a spiffed-up version of the Reddit Han Effen Solo GIF, with sound added and the hashtag FraudNewsCNN. It soon became Trump's most retweeted tweet ever. The crudeness and brazenness of the tweet quickly became a big story. Many journalists were outraged seeing a video encouraging an atmosphere of violence against journalists. Trump supporters saw it as a harmless mockery. Wow. The Reddit Han Effen Solo wrote in a post Sunday, "I never expected my meme to be retreated by the God Emperor himself." Then came the plot twist. It turns out that the guy who posted the GIF also posted a list of Jews who work at CNN and a bunch of other really nasty racist stuff.
Really?
Uh-huh. On the Internet, there's a principle of sudden celebrity. You could call it the milkshake duck rule, inspired by a popular Twitter joke. The whole Internet loves a milkshake duck, a lovely duck that drinks milkshakes. 5 seconds later, we regret to inform you that the duck is a racist. Journalists, curious about who made the president's CNN wrestling meme, quickly identified the Reddit Han Effen Solo as the author. Then they spotted the stuff he'd been posting before he went viral. The N-word for black people. The F-word for gay people. The R-word for mentally disabled people. He also posted a list of CNN employees next to images of the Star of David, writing, "Something strange about CNN. Can't quite put my finger on it." The fact suggested that not only had the president or someone on his team taken an image from someone on Reddit, but that whoever it was didn't check to see who they were stealing it from. The White House, for its part, denied getting the wrestling video from Reddit, but hasn't given any further information. And by the way, the Washington Post searched for days to find it. Couldn't at any other source. Yet while the user was anonymous, he was not untraceable. CNN, Andrew Kaczynski, tracked down the man behind the account for comment, which apparently prompted the user to preemptively publish an apology on R. the Donald for posts made that were racist, bigoted, and anti-Semitic. Well, it goes on, and then CNN finally said, you know, we're not going to reveal the name of the of Hans Effen Solo, because he has apologized for his racist rants, and because he has promised not to do any more of them, and we will keep his name out of the news so long as he honors that accord. Well, then the president's son said, well, so now CNN is into blackmailing 15-year-old boys? Now, Hans Effen Solo isn't 15. He's an adult male.
Mm-hmm.
And it is true that by saying, you know, we'll keep you private unless you do something we don't want you to do, and then we'll publish your name, that's a form of blackmail. CNN is guilty of that. That is inappropriate. So here's some more tidbits. These are not now from the LA Times. It says the user found more success. This was Han Effen Solo on the Donald, an extremely popular Reddit subgroup, especially in the idolization of Trump and the degradation of his enemies, imagined or real, through the most offensive means possible. It sounds a lot like a Facebook group that we had to expose and condemn. Yeah. Thus, Hans --- Solo's offering on Wednesday a gift of Trump pummeling Vince McMahon. McMahon, Vince McMahon, at a long ago WrestleMania with the CNN logo superimposed over McMahon's face. Trump takes down fake news, it was titled. It did fine, a few thousand votes. You know how they have a little thumbs up, I guess, on, you see them. So it's just something special by the R. Donald's standard, nothing special by that standard, until 9:21 a.m. Sunday, that is, when Trump himself tweeted a tweaked version of the clip and made history. Hans Effen Solo, holy S-H-I-T. Wake up and have my morning coffee, and who's retweets my Essen post, but the MAGA emperor himself. I am so honored. Oh, Hans was just thrilled.
I bet.
Joy echoed across the Donald, which a day earlier had been more interested in conspiracy theories about the Clintons killing people and stick figure drawings of Californians embarrassing themselves. Tweeted by the president, one of our many admirers wrote, "Now it's confirmed that Trump sees our memes. We all wish for such validation. You are a legend." If we could only give him that, or if we could give him that, imagine what else we could provide the God Emperor in Chief with, the moderator of the group added.
Sounds like Rome.
Oh, God. Where is Caligula?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, where is Nero? Wow.
I Claudius, it becomes I Trump. Yeah.
Reminds me a little bit of the fellow that was listening to, he's the opposite side of the aisle, but the fellow that was listening to the Coast to Coast interview, that many responded to. I made an attempt to reach him a couple of times. We can keep his nameless, but he began with the title of the Honorable.
Yeah. The Right Honorable. Right.
The Right Honorable. And then, announced that he was a gay atheist. That's how he defined himself.
Brilliant.
So utterly brilliant. And had numerous relatives that ran European countries. We had common turf. He recognized that religion was false.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we began. And I had hoped that I could help him recognize that just because religion is false, it doesn't make God false.
Yes, I was too.
You know, it's a and you. It's easy to prove religion false. But what he did not realize is that religion's depictions of God are false. That God, in fact, has absolutely nothing to do with religion. If, in fact, God was defined by religion, it would be easy to prove the validity of atheism, because mm-hmm. it is child's play to disprove any religion. You know, and I can, in 15 minutes, I can absolutely destroy the credibility of Scientology, of Mormonism, of Islam, of Christianity, of Buddhism as a religion, and as socialist secular humanism, because it is a belief system. It would take no more than 15 minutes to destroy the credibility of all of them beyond any reasonable argument.
Let me ask you something about that in regards to Christianity, because I've been reading your emails back and forth as well. And, you know, long before Terry found your, heard you on the radio, and then we went to your site and started reading, I had a pretty good lack of a church history.
Mm-hmm.
I have pretty good knowledge of that. And one of the names that I studied quite a lot was Marcion.
Yeah,
and if you took Marcion and he rejects the Torah, Prophet, and Psalms, the Navi and the Mizmor.
Mm-hmm.
He rejects all of the apostles, witness records.
Correct.
He only keeps Paul's letters and
portions of Luke Lucas's, and Acts. Portions of Luke's and Acts
report and his accounts called the Acts.
Right,
and that was his quote unquote Bible.
Yeah, that was
so
his.
You start out right. with, and that is Christianity. Without it, you have no Christianity.
Yeah. And by the way, Marcion is a was an extremely wealthy man
mm-hmm.
who owned a large shipping conglomerate,
mm-hmm.
and he was a major benefactor of the Roman Catholic Church, and was resolutely a Gnostic.
Right.
Now, Gnosticism was very popular in the day. Socrates, for example, Aristotle, they were Gnostics. The Gnostic religion was that the physical was bad. It was an inferior and flawed, fatally flawed reflection of the perfect, which was the spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
And so the flesh was bad, the spirit was good, is the Gnosticism. That's the basis of Paul's letters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Paul's attack on the Torah, the prophets and Psalms, but particularly the Torah and its covenant, is an attack on the flesh. That's why he was so opposed to circumcision. So the flesh is bad, the spirit is good. That's the basis of Paul's letters. It was the basis of Gnosticism. Marcion was a Gnostic. He loved Paul's letters. I don't think, and that's why it's interesting for you to bring him up, I don't think Christianity would exist today as a religion if it were not for Marcion.
Oh, absolutely not.
Now, to blame Marcion is a little bit like blaming Huxley, blaming Huxley for Darwin,
mm-hmm.
and evolution. You know, Huxley promoted Darwin, but the case is that what Paul wrote was vile, disgusting, inappropriate, errant. But it's Marcion who made him world-renowned.
Yeah,
world-renowned.
But at least you have got to give Marcion some credit. I mean, he knew what Paul was, and he rejected
yes.
everything that Paul objected to. And,
right.
and canon together.
Right.
He rejected everything that wasn't Paul or really, really close like Lucas on that.
Right.
So at least he was doing exactly what, you know, he put his money where his mouth was.
Yes.
The problem I have is why Christianity, you know, because there is no, on that fact alone, you cannot coexist with Paul and the Torah.
No.
They're
an opposite. They're direct opposition.
About Christianity, because I mean, even the Roman Catholic Church called him a heretic later. But what is it?
Well, they didn't call him a heretic for his position on Paul. They didn't call him a heretic for his position on Gnosticism. They called him a heretic because he became too powerful.
Yeah.
He became way too influential. They wanted his money, but they didn't like the threat that he was to their power.
Yeah. So what is it about Christianity and Islam? I mean, Shintoism, Confucianism, Buddhism, all these other things, social secular humanism for that matter, doesn't need the Torah
right.
at all to state right. their case.
Right. Yeah, they're wholly independent of
Christianity and Islam.
Right.
That they have to cling on to something, some type of connection with the Torah for their own credibility.
Correct.
And why is it so hard for people to reject it?
Well, I think that it's there's a number of reasons for that. The primary reason that Islam, for example, depends on the credibility of the Torah is that all Muhammad was a really stupid individual, vicious, mean, perverted. And not very bright, illiterate as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so Muhammad was stumped. He had been run out of Mecca on a rail, a laughing stock, because of the mythical journey to Jerusalem, to the non-existent temple, for being a 53-year-old man and having sex with a 6-year-old girl. Even the Meccans knew that wasn't appropriate. For his claim that the biggest rock in the rock pile that was the Kaaba was suddenly God, and for then citing and plagiarizing the poetry of the Hanafs down in Yemen for the first 30 or 40 of his Quran recitations. But then he was challenged. He was said, okay, why don't you say something that's prophetic? Why don't you prove that you really are speaking for God? And he was absolutely stumped. He just went into radio silence for a long period of time. And finally, he started buying Talmud recitals from rabbis in Yathrib, today's Medina.
Mm-hmm.
And so he took those, twisted them, bastardized them for his own personal use. And so his references to the characters in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms is a direct derivative of him buying and then twisting Talmud readings that he bought from the rabbis to give his new religion credibility.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why Islam refers to it. It is a, it's like this article from UNESCO says, that all three the great religions all claim and honor Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and of course that's not true. The Christian Abraham is brought to you by Paul, and he bears absolutely no resemblance whatsoever to the actual Abraham. And the Islamic characters are twisted even further from reality. Right. It's like saying that the French worship George Washington, and their rendition of George Washington is a Frenchman instead of an American.
Mm-hmm.
It would have him in the wrong war, and you name it, serving the wrong country. I mean, everything about the Quranic variations are twisted. So for Islam, they exist because Muhammad ran out of material. It's the only reason they exist.
Yeah.
Had Jews not sold him the Talmud readings, the Quran never would have seen the light of day. Islam never would have left Mecca. Its credibility is established entirely based upon the bastardization and plagiarism of the Talmud readings. Now, for Christianity, it's a different story. What they did is they took Yahusha and renamed him, and recognized that he constantly said, "If you want to understand who I am, you've got to read the Torah and the prophets." And Paul knew that that's where he had been presented, so he made this argument against the Torah, but there was no mistaking the idea that Yahusha had himself said over and over and over again that he was the living affirmation of the Torah, and the only way to understand him is to read the Torah and the prophets. And so that's why you've got to have that. That's why, you know, he cited everything that he cited, 100% of what he cited came from the Torah and prophets.
Sure.
And so then you have Paul denouncing the Torah. And so you've got Christianity carrying it around and saying, well, it's relevant when it speaks of prophecies regarding Yosha. It might be relevant on their Ten Commandments if we can retranslate them so they don't say the same thing. But the rest of it has been replaced with our New Testament. And then you go and say, well, if God was telling the truth with his Torah, and your New Testament is the opposite of it, how could he be telling the truth with the New Testament?
Yeah.
I mean, one place to the other, he's lying.
It just boggles the mind that people who have real intelligence can't put that together.
Yeah. You know, as I've said so many times, the most popular deception in human history is the notion that God recognized that he was an ineffective communicator and that he was a poor planner and that his means to salvation was unworkable and his method of communication was not effective. So he reached out and found a murderous, perverted, failed rabbi, and said, you know, I can't figure this out. Obviously, my plan doesn't work, so I'm going to have you come up with an entirely different plan. By the way, forget about Yosha and the 12 disciples. I don't want you to ever quote a single thing that Yosha said or did, because that obviously was based on my Torah. So we got to forget about that. You can use his name, but you can't ever cite anything he said or did. And I want you to be in direct opposition to the 12 that he lived with and taught. And your plan, as opposed to mine, because your plan is going to contradict mine in every possible way, and that is the myth that 2.5 billion people believe. And I want you to tell me, is there any other way of properly positioning God versus Paul?
You'd have to be a genius to come up with something like that, because it can't be done. It can't be done logically. It can't be done. You have to kill off, you have to burn every Torah, and you have to kill off every Jew, every Yehudim.
That's why he turned against the Jews. That's why he turned against the Torah.
They tell you why they attack them all the time.
All right, so if you quote God from the Torah, say that no longer matters.
Well, they know why Muhammad wiped out Yathrib.
Yeah, and one of the listeners on that show was this fellow that said, did you really say that Jesus didn't exist? I said, no, what I said is that the name Jesus never existed. No one ever existed with the name Jesus. That his real name was Yosha. And I went on to speak a number of things about him. And I answered this person, oh, okay, I guess that makes sense. And he says, but, you know, I believe that he was, you know, fully divine and that, you know, he came for the purpose of the crucifixion and resurrection. What do you say? You know, and I answered this fellow and said, no. First of all, God is seven-dimensional. The universe is somewhere between four and six dimensions. Just as you can't enter two dimensions, God, who is seven dimensions, cannot enter three to six. It's impossible. So, whoever you want to call him, his real name is Yosha, could not have been the entirety of God. Crucifixion is essentially irrelevant. What's relevant is Passover.
Mm-hmm.
It's not how the body of the Passover lamb was slain. It's why the body of the Passover lamb was slain that matters. So crucifixion, no, he didn't come for that. That's irrelevant. Now, as for resurrection, he could not have been resurrected bodily. First, it would have been counterproductive. Second, people would have recognized him when, in fact, all four references to his post-Bukhutum state, no one recognized him, much less he could travel through walls. But his body had to be destroyed on the eve of Passover to be consistent with the Torah's instructions.
Right.
So I wrote this guy that, and rather than dealing with any of that, he just comes back and says, well, you know, it's a, Jesus is from the Greek, and, you know, we in English just use that name, and nowhere does it say. And he went on to this, you know, God command us to use a different name, and, you know, it's by the Lord's name that you shall call on to be saved. And I wrote the guy this long email, I mean, refuting every point. Said, you know, there isn't a single statement that you made in this whole thing that's accurate. I mean, you have been so beguiled by your religion.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through and disproved every statement that he made.
As I read.
You know, for example, no, Yosha, Jesus isn't from the Greek.
No.
100% of the of the pre-Constantine codexes of the so-called Christian New Testament use placeholders. The name isn't written out once in Greek. So it can't be a from the Greek, plus, of course, the J wasn't invented. So that's a lie.
Yes.
Get over it. You know, and then he was talking about his, you know, it's been replaced by the gospel. It's a pagan term.
Right.
There's no gospel. God doesn't have a gospel. You know, it's you and a gelos. It means beneficial messenger. Not God spell. Point by point, refuting everything that the man had said on behalf of his religion. And what does he do? He sends me a link of a article written by Martin Luther King on the divinity and humanity, that Jesus was fully divine and fully human. That's, of course, Pauline. That the Godhead, the fullness of the Godhead was on him bodily. It's rubbish. It's impossible.
Yes.
Where was God? And that would mean that the statement, my God, why have you forsaken me, which is, of course, a quotation from the 22nd Psalm. It's not a question. It's an answer. But that would mean, how would that be possible if the fullness of God was on him bodily?
Mm-hmm. How do you kill God?
How do you kill God? God can't die.
You, God.
Yeah, God can't die.
You can't die. If you can, we're in trouble.
Yeah, if man can kill God, it's for damn sure that God can't save man.
No.
No, the Christianity is so preposterous. You know, my favorite, of course, is in translations is. Church, because church is not a translation, as you know. It's an alteration. It's a copy edit. It's a novel attempt to create a Christian institution replacing the Greek ecclesia. Now, ecclesia isn't transliterated, and it shouldn't have been. It's just a standard word. It's from ek and klesio. Klesio means to call, and ek means out, to call out. It is a translation, ecclesia is a translation, of the Hebrew mikra, which is the name, the title that Yahweh has offered for his seven annual meetings. So Yahweh has seven annual meetings, the mikra. And ecclesia was a translation of mikra. And rather than reference the mikra, which is the foundation of Yahweh's plan of redemption of humankind, that's the only path to God's home and thus to salvation. The new religion created a church out of nothing. I mean, so church is not just wrong. It's a replacement for what's right. And then we went into to Lord, how he kept on talking about the Lord. I said, every time that you read Lord in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, it's Yod Heh Wah Heh, Yahweh.
Every time.
Yeah. Lord is Satan's title, according to Yahweh. And for that, he sends me a link to an article written by a dead man. I mean, why not send 1,000 articles written by a dead former
preachers.
Christian preachers.
Yeah.
And my response to him, too, I said, listen, if you want to have a debate after you have read An Introduction to God, yada yada, questioning Paul and observations, any one of them, and you want to cite Yahweh's testimony from the Torah, prophets, and Psalms to demonstrate that my conclusions are invalid, I will absolutely engage with you. And we'll have a debate as to whether or not you're right or I'm right or we're both right as it relates to or both wrong related to something Yahweh said. But the only argument that matters is Yahweh's testimony in this regard. I mean, there are issues that Yahweh's testimony doesn't matter. You know, if you're trying to determine the proper arrangement for the injectors and the igniters and the hot section of a turbine engine, Yahweh's testimony does not pertain. But if you're talking about the Creator and the creation of the universe, the nature of God, His plan, His testimony, then the only thing that matters is what He said. Nothing else. Not even an article from Martin Luther King.
No, no. Let me ask you something. Why is it no one catches on that every word, every name important to Yahweh is not transliterated and changed, but every one that's associated with Hasatan, like
yes.
Nebuchadnezzar, will always be transliterated perfectly.
Right. Including Satan.
Yeah.
Satan Satan happens to be is a perfect transliteration of Hasatan.
Yeah.
Why is it that the despicable individuals get their names transliterated correctly, and Yahweh does not?
Paulos, but not Peter. Not
Shimon Kedesh. Yeah. Yeah, Paulos got his name the way that he chose it, but not Yahochanan. Not Matanyah.
Not even Isaiah.
Not even Yahshua.
Because then you'd have to say Yah, and then you have to say, what does that mean?
Yeah, what does that mean? I mean, the only thing that they get sort of right is Hallelujah.
Yeah.
But they change it to Hallelujah, you know?
Yeah,
Jah.
Yeah. Thank God they got a J finally.
Yeah. There's one that they actually get completely right, but that probably spelled it wrong too, but it's Kumbaya.
Yeah.
And then what follows that, of course, then they screw it up again. You know, Kumbaya means to stand with Yah. Kum is to stand in Hebrew. Ba is with or in Hebrew. And Yah is the familial form of Yahweh's name. Yeah, it's astonishing. But that is the nature of religion and really the nature of fallen thinking, of an incapacity. To think, you know, here's this individual that was with so many degrees and so well read that was the gay atheist, and his arguments were pathetic.
Yeah,
he could not refute anything that was said, and his arguments in favor of his position were arguments against religion.
Yeah.
We weren't talking about.
Well, and he told you right up front. He said, "Look, I don't have the time. So many things are much more important. I don't have the time to read about some God that I don't think exists. Therefore, you know, it must be a lie anyway. So why should I waste my time doing it? Well, why engage you at all?
Right.
You got one person who wrote you that was thrilled to know and wanted to know more. You've got one person who, how dare you insult his religion, even if you can prove it, and you got another one who says, I don't even care.
Right.
I'm not going to take a minute of my time to read anything you've researched. So
I want you to know that I have relatives that ran 8 European countries, and I really, really like Prince.
They didn't run it very well.
No, in fact, he even admits that that they were not religious themselves, but used religion, even though they knew it was false, to control the people.
Yeah.
So why would you brag about that?
world just proves it's dumber every day.
I'm stunningly disappointed. Yeah. Well, but that was, you say, all right, so I gave up 2 days, to do that show on Coast to Coast. The day prior, you're preparing for it. I shared my notes. I probably had 20 pages of notes that I had prepared. And that's the only show I've ever done where the host asked for a dozen questions.
Yes.
So he wanted me to write the questions that he should ask.
Yes.
I've never done that for any host before. An effective interview is that the interviewee never knows the questions that are going to be asked.
Yeah.
But no, I was asked to write all the questions. That took some time. And then I put together pages and pages and pages of documentation on the answers, because if you're going to present your own questions, you better be prepared to answer them. Now, the next thing is that they had me write the synopsis for the show. They had me write a biography of myself for the show. By the time you do all of this, and you're saying, after a while, why am I doing this?
The show.
Yeah.
Oh, Scott. You're on the board, Scott. We're going to do this show.
And then it starts at 1 o'clock in the morning, goes to 3:00, and the only way, I'm an older guy, man. I used to be able to stay up all night and function. I can't do that anymore. And so you're drinking my drug of choice, which is coffee. The one socially acceptable drug, I guess. anyway, you drink coffee. By the time that show was over at 3 o'clock, man, I was
wired.
I never fell asleep. So that next day,
I'm not an older guy, but I still can't stay up all night.
Oh, we're talking about Coast to Coast. They claim that their overall audience is a quarter of a billion people, 250 million people.
That's impressive.
Now, that's not just the radio part of it, because the radio part is probably only 4 million that listen live in the middle of the night, most of which are truck drivers and conspiracy advocates, and obviously a lot of pro-Trumpers.
That's all they wanted to talk about. Let's get Trump on this line.
Why would you want Trump on this line? The guy is, I wrote him off immediately. I said, he's clearly a narcissist. And the vast preponderance of what he says is invalid, inappropriate, wrong.
Yeah.
Oh,
the good
my.
News is this 14, yes. let's say there's potentially 14 million, which is what I read they might have. But even four, that's still one in a million is a wonderful opportunity.
But the reality of all this is that it's the same as when we were doing Shattered Myth program. 99% of the audience for any radio program is podcasts and archives.
Yeah.
99%. And it's the same thing. It's the same thing that's true for Coast to Coast. The overwhelming preponderance of people do not listen to it live. They listen to the archive. It's at some later time. And whether it's iHeartRadio or they join George Norrie's show. The one thing I will say for George Norrie, though, and I think this is a merit. When I did his show, and I don't know if I did it, I did Coast to Coast either two or three times, but one of those times was with Art Bell, the original host of the show. Mm-hmm. And when George Norrie, when I presented, this is what's going to happen in Afghanistan, this is what's going to happen in Iraq, these are unwinnable wars, here's the problem, here's the nature of Islam, this is why we're going to increase terrorism, not decrease it with our bullets and bombs. And I went through, and everything I predicted over a course of 2 hours materialized exactly as I said, at a time, 14 years ago, when no one was willing to say these things. No one. And when I did that show, 100% of the callers were freaked out. They were really hostile to me. But you know who was really hostile to me? George Norrie. George Norrie.
Yeah.
And to be fair, George Norrie wasn't the least bit hostile this time.
Yeah, I thought he was like in a coma. You drop bombs on this man like the end of the world. Here's the time.
Right. Right.
And he didn't even come back.
Right. Yeah, here is a 2,700-year-old prophecy that says that the uh, that that Syria is going to fall depicts America's involvement in the Syrian war and depicts exactly the course of that war. And then I labeled everything that's going to happen after that war, as well as the fact that the United States was specifically condemned by God for aiding and abetting the Muslims fighting that war. And then what's going to happen thereafter, including the day that Yah was going to return, the exact day. And it just was...
And nothing.
Nothing. I know.
What's next? Let's go to the next thing now, the next question. I mean, was he asleep?
I don't know. But he wasn't critical.
No.
It wasn't critical. It just was
unresponsive. If I had the position that most of these guys do, I'd be saying, we'll hold on there, partner. What does that mean?
Oh, you get this call from a...
How do you come over that?
You get a call from a Christian, and I said, because he was bragging about building churches, and he wanted to know, a couple of issues. And I said, first of all, God does not have a church. Here's the word. It's ecclesia. This is what it means. It's about the mikra. Took that right back to Yom Kippurim, which is the mikra that upon which Yah was going to return. How there's no one named Jesus. There's the actual name is Yosha, and everything this guy had said about his religion, I discredited.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm positive that George Norrie has never heard any of that.
No, hardly anyone has heard any of that.
And
that's what's so sad.
Wasn't a comment. Just next caller.
Yeah. I mean, gosh, I would just think as a professional host, and I'm not just picking on him because I'm sure it would happen from a lot of people. They just get either stunned or they're deer's in the headlights or something. But at some point, you think a professional would engage in the conversation.
You know, here's my thought. First of all, I was actually very complimentary of George Norrie.
He was so much better.
Yeah, so much better than he was 14 years ago. Yes, I would have thought that he would have responded more, but he gave me lots of opportunity to talk. And you know, you can be helpful or you can be popular. You can't be both, and his goal is to be popular, not helpful.
Well, it's also a two-way street. A lot of times when you first, I see it in other shows, when somebody comes on for the first time,
yes.
A host usually likes to let them
kind of
hold the floor.
Because
you get a lot of complaints from people about the other side of that, where, well, you never let me talk. You know?
All right. Okay. Or also, if the guest is saying things that are going to upset the audience, George Norrie's position is he's trying to be popular.
Yeah.
You don't become popular by telling people what they don't want to hear. You become popular by telling people what they want to hear. Here's a guest that's telling people things that are not popular, and so it's better to stand back, let them do it without him engaging.
Yeah.
And now we get back to Stan. Same principle there on that show, the first show and then the last show.
Correct.
And then, well, the next time, I mean, I guess I'd have to see if you ever go on it again, how he goes about the next time.
Well, he told his audience that he wanted to have me back. He told the gentleman that booked the program that he wanted to have me back. But, you know, I've sent an email to Lisa, his producer, after the show, thanking her for it, saying that I was appreciative of George's approach and how much he had grown over those 14 years, and you know, happy to do it again. I hope that the show worked to their satisfaction. I didn't hear a peep back from her. So my guess is that they got too much flack. I mean, it really just goes back to this issue, Scott, and you know this issue. It was the issue you and I talked about all the time. You can be popular by telling people what they want to hear. Or you can be helpful by telling them the truth. But if you want to tell people the truth, you will never be popular.
Well, the other side of that is, I mean, we also talked about that, to where, I mean, what are you asking people to do on stuff like that? You're asking them to take something that they built themselves up on, you know, they built their foundation on, you know, this religion.
Right.
And you're asking them to question that. And it takes a strong person to finally be like, hey, wait a minute. Yeah, I might be wrong on that. And go back and rather than having my house fall down later, let's tear it down now and then build it back up so it's better. And we've always talked about that, you know, where, look, we have a blueprint for a good, solid house. Mm-hmm. Now, do we follow that, or do we rely on a lesser blueprint?
Yeah. Are you going to put it on top of your faulty house, or even on top of your faulty foundation, or are you going to realize that you really need to clear the your faulty house away and lay a solid foundation and build the house the correct way from the ground up?
And I even see that still with certain people as we were getting phone calls. Well, who was the gentleman from Philadelphia? He was always correcting your... Glenn, yes.
Yeah.
You would see with Glenn where he was piecing it together, and you're like, wow, this guy's really making advances. And then he'd say something where, like, well, he's just building on that faulty foundation. He's putting this new thing on that faulty foundation. You got to take it all down. You got to start from the beginning.
Correct.
You can't keep part of your precious church and stuff like that. You have to take it all out. It has to be all gone.
Yes.
And then you have to go from there.
What is Yosha's last statement? Come out of her, my people. Come out of Babylon, my people. What was the first requirement of Abraham to be part of the covenant? Walk away from your country. Walk away from Babel. You're correct. You have to walk away from those things. And what my view was, Scott, on that kind of a show of Coast to Coast, which is, I think, is the second largest radio audience in the world, is that if one in 100,000 people is motivated to question either their politics or their religion, so that for the first time they're actually thinking about these things, then, you know, we've made some progress. That's the first step. Then if 10% of those that were motivated to think about these things actually take some time to consider the truth about God, because, you know, they link directly to Yada Yah and the translations of Yahweh's words. And if 10% of those actually come to know Yah, then it was worth the time. It was worth the effort. So I figured that maybe one in 10,000 would actually resonate enough, the things that were said, the predictions of the future that turned out to be true, the credibility that should have been garnered from that, to speak about these other things. I mean, that's even, George says, listen, you may want to listen to him, because way before anybody else told us it was going to happen in Iran and Iraq and Afghanistan, he laid it all out, and he was right. So you may want to listen to him now. That credibility should have gotten at least one in 100,000 to start questioning their military, their patriotism, their country, and later their religion. And if 10% of those make an attempt to know Yahweh, and if 10% of them actually come to know him, well, then it was a worthwhile investment of time.
Well, I enjoyed the show a lot. So,
you know, that's the kind of show that really wasn't for members of the covenant, because, you know, there wasn't anything that was said that would be news to a covenant member. And, of course, the credibility wasn't, it was testimony. The credibility was having learned about Islam and therefore accurately predicting what was going to happen in Afghanistan and in Iraq, and then going, using that as the leverage into Yah's testimony. We all of us, and that's the only reason it could have any value at all to a covenant member, is we all are put in a position where it's important for us to be able to credibly present Yahweh's name, his nature, and his plan, and to credibly explain why he wants us to walk away from religion and politics. And so, you know, that wasn't by any stretch, a perfect expose on those topics, but it was just one more that, you know, we can build off of, so that the next time that we're in that position, you know, we're maybe a little better prepared.
Well, you got that, the podcast, like you said, there's a lot more people that are going to hear it, and you gave out your email, and a lot of people are going to contact you off of that.
That is correct. Lots and lots. Thank you, Scotty.